on Mr. Media, I'll talk to filmmakers Jim Pasternak and Richard Marshall, creators of a new mockumentary about comedian Jonathan Winters titled Certifiably Jonathan. Stick around. I'm of two minds about this whole thing.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free download at Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher.com.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of people claiming to be characters created by Jonathan Winters in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Did you ever undress in front of a dog?
What is he really like? You'll never know. My folks didn't.
I don't understand the boy.
What are you?
He's quite evidently that missing link between Miro and Dali.
You're going to be shown at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. But there seems to be a little bit of a problem.
Muffy can't paint, you can't paint, you can't paint, I can't paint.
He brought every single painting, he hasn't left.
Yeah, it's a squirrel.
You can be funny and not have your sense of humor.
Hey, Pecker, let's do it.
Mm. I want you to get your humor.
This right. Much can score you in the morning. That's going to shake it up.
We need you to find the witch doctor who stolen my sense of humor, frankly.
Come again, please.
You can just watch comedies, but that may not inspire comedy. Maybe you want to see something like Hotel Rwanda.
I'm Mr. Jack-O-Lantern. These are teeth, partly from Kitty and Doug.
That's it!
Will he put me on? I can show up.
See, this is why life is so difficult. One moment you're tied, the next moment you're in last place.
Your medication has got to take effect soon.
These are things that will never be seen, hopefully.
Finding the real Jonathan Winters could not be easy. But you might try looking in the toy aisle at Target with Howie Mandel. Or a video store with Sarah Silverman, perhaps flashing a little boob. Just one, though. Let's not go crazy. If all else fails, there's always a seance to be had with the Arquette family. Filmmakers Jim Pasternak and Richard Marshall shot 250 hours with Winters and a parade of comedians marching through his life, including everyone from Robin Williams and Jim Carrey to Robert Klein and Jimmy Kimmel. It's not quite a documentary and not quite a story, although there is a slice of fiction threaded in there, I think. What it is, and what matters most, is that Pasternak and Marshall have captured a late-in-life slice of the great Jonathan Winters, sprinkled in with classic moments from the humorous past. And like every other moment in time when you've seen this particular comedian, you're never quite sure what's real and what's performance. But who cares? It's an irresistible piece of cinema about one of our greatest comedians. Joining me today is Certifiably Jonathan director, Jim Pasternak, and producer-photographer, Richard Marshall. And guys, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
Thank you. You said you were of two minds, which is good because Jonathan Winters is bipolar.
It just seemed fitting to say that. And you know, the thing is, in watching the film, you're never quite sure if he's having a bipolar moment or if they're all bipolar moments. Could you guys tell after a while?
No.
It was catching. You know, we caught it. And we exhibited the same symptoms from time to time when we were around Jonathan. So it was very hard to tell anything.
We were very different people 4 or 5 years ago before we started. Was that 7 years ago? We don't even know that.
You've lost track of that, too. How different was your perception of him from the beginning to now? Did you see him differently when you started than when you finished?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he's a comic icon. So when you meet somebody famous like that, you tend to be in awe right away. And they always look a little bit different than you've seen them on the television screen or on the movie theater. And we were with a man who was 78 years old, and he's 85 years old now. So we were involved with a person who was evolving over a period of time while we were making the film. And so his comic genius and his bipolar personality thing, and now he's really focused on his art and on his writing.
Richard, I'm sorry, were you going to add something to that? It looked like you...
It's funny because we each had a different sort of relationship with Jonathan because of Jim's presence in the film and on camera. And, you know, Jonathan has this famous, whenever you're with Jonathan, he always says, "I work alone, you know, don't step on my jokes." But it was clear that Jonathan needed somebody in the frame in the film to play off of. And so Jim offered himself up, and I think it worked very well. However,
he didn't think it worked very well. He complained that there was too much Jim in the film.
Right.
So we took more Jim out of the film. Okay. Still think he thinks there's too much Jim.
But Jim had this sort of authority figure role to play with Jonathan, and Jonathan is very anti-authority, you know, in every way possible. And so since I was sort of behind the scenes, behind the camera most of the time, I almost had a relationship with him. He almost had a grandfather role to me.
And what else did you have? You had?
I don't know.
A pig.
Oh.
Richard has a pig. Okay. And Jonathan liked that a lot. That's the only reason he liked you more than he liked
That's
me.
Probably
the
true.
Pig.
That's
the probably, only reason.
Probably right.
Mother always liked you better. I feel like I'm watching the Smothers Brothers. Well, it did seem in watching the film that he had a preference for Richard over Jim. But again, this is part of the thing that's confusing in watching the film, and really doesn't matter, I guess. How do we separate what's scripted and what's not here? I mean, the interaction between Jonathan and the two of you, for example, in shooting things, scripted, not scripted?
I wouldn't use the word scripted.
Okay.
I mean, what happens is that as you make a film, a narrative sort of develops. And there's this human need in all of us to structure reality around us in some form of narrative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we started off making a documentary of fact of Jonathan and his new career as a painter. But because of his improvisational riffs and where he would take us, certain things began to emerge. And so we found ourselves not only making a documentary of fact, but a documentary of Jonathan's imagination at work. So the film operates on these different levels. And I think it's not really a question of fiction or nonfiction. I think it's a question of psychological narrative.
Wow. That was pretty good.
Yeah, psychological narrative.
So the truth of it is that it did start as a documentary, and then it just took on its own life.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, we would be interviewing him, he'd be talking about art, and all of a sudden he'd just go into a character and start riffing. And that was kind of when we realized, wow, there's a lot more here than just, you know, a film about Jonathan Winters as a painter. And then we had a lot of happy accidents. When Jim Carrey, a little scene with Jim Carrey, he wandered into the gallery one night just out of the blue, and we ended up shooting him. And same thing happened. Requests from other talent, they just wanted to meet Jonathan because, you know, he's a mentor to so many great comedians. And scripted, that's an interesting...
It wasn't scripted. It began to be structured, but these were improvisational geniuses.
Okay.
And I, for one, had to learn to let go and let whatever happen. So in a way, the film is really directed by Jonathan.
Whenever we'd try to script anything, he'd just look at it and toss it aside.
Yeah.
Said, I don't do other people's script.
No, but he'd get the structure, and he'd know what was important in terms of the ongoing story that was emerging. And he was complicit in that. It wasn't something that was just created to be a fantasy inside a documentary. It was
sort of like an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where there's a
That's not a bad simile. I mean, it really it has that style.
Because you have Larry going through all the scenes, and then there's always the interaction where cameos with famous comedians or movie stars just happen to walk in, you know, and you know it's planned, but it's not entirely planned, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
Now, there were two, there are some real setup moments. Nora Dunn several times, the Arquette family. I assume some of that, maybe not for Jonathan, but maybe for the other players, some of that was scripted or directed in some way.
Do you think so?
I don't know. I really.
Well,
it's a really,
there's a lot of controversy about that, you know?
If only we could find someone who was there to tell us.
Ah, if only. We've been working on that. That's what post-production is all about.
Mm-hmm. All right. And that seems to be the answer to that question. I'll tell you what. We need to take a very quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with filmmakers Jim Pasternak and Richard Marshall, whose new movie is Certifiably Jonathan, starring Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams, who we'll come back and talk about in just a minute. And folks, we'll be right back.
The kitchens of today can be more beautiful in 1949 because this year there's a better, brighter, self-polishing floor wax. It's 1949 Glow Coat. Yes, bright as it's always been, this year Glow Coat is brighter than ever, better than any. Try 1949 Glow Coat on your linoleum this week.
This is Creskin. You know me as the amazing Creskin. Whenever I'm in Vegas, I enjoy picking up girls with Mr. Media.
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with filmmakers Jim Pasternak and Richard Marshall, whose new movie is Certifiably Jonathan, starring Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams. Now, guys, since Robin Williams burst onto the scene in the mid-1970s as Mork from Ork, Jonathan Winters has never been far from the conversation. And this film enjoys a very healthy dose of Robin interacting with Jonathan. What was it like to film them together?
Well, it was like father and son in a way. They have a deep, abiding love for one another. And they would go off on a corner and they would catch up together. And Robin was always extremely affectionate with Jonathan. Mm-hmm. And you can see the similarities in their rapid lightning brain kind of comedy. Jonathan tends to be a little slower because he develops characters, mm-hmm. whereas Robin does shtick very, very quickly. But they both settle into a rhythm together, a rhythm that, you know, Gary Marshall has said was screamingly funny on the television set and always funnier than when they shot the scenes. It was the stuff going on between the two of them, between scenes, that was so special.
There were times where Jonathan refers to Robin. Sometimes it seems a little like he's taking a shot. Sometimes, you know, and there's warmth there, but there's also a little acerbic taste as well. You couldn't always tell if he was grateful for the reverence that Robin has given him over the years, or if he was a little resentful that Robin had stolen his shtick.
Both. I mean, it's bipolar.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he resented any comedians taking his shtick. And Robin's notorious, I'm told, like a sponge. Other comedians are very nervous about performing when he's around because Robin has a way of absorbing life and comedy. So there was some of that. I mean, there was a kind of competition, but mostly fatherly pride, which you can see in some of the scenes between the two of them in the film.
I have the sense, and it's just me, but I have the sense that had Robin Williams not come along when he did and treated Jonathan Winters with the reverence and respect that he did over the last almost 40 years now, Jonathan Winters probably wouldn't be remembered by as many people because his career had kind of risen and set by the time Mork and Mindy came along.
Well, that's certainly right about certain generations, you know, of people. I think that the only reason why anybody between 35 and 50 know
about Jonathan is because of Mark and Mindy. Mm-hmm.
Well, also, Jonathan, you know, there was a period in his life where he wanted to put all of his energy into his family. You know, going on the road, doing stand-up, you know, caused him to hallucinate. And so, you know, he went in for treatment, and he spent 8 months, you know, in an asylum when it was, you know, where he was treated and came out, you know, feeling, you know, really good and feeling really, really, really healthy. I forgot why I was talking about this. What were you talking about?
Well, because at that point, his career could have ended easily at that point.
Yeah.
As well, and until Stanley Kramer, you know, offered him the role in Mad Mad World. And his wife said, you have to take that role or else you'll probably never work again. So
it may have peaked before Mork and Mindy. And I think you're right that Mork and Mindy, where, you know, Jonathan plays Mork's baby, really did invigorate his career. And then he was also on a series of shows. He was always welcome on The Tonight Show and was voted the favorite Tonight Show guest of all time. Mm-hmm. And was on Bonnie Hunt's show. And from time to time, he's also the voice of Papa Smurf. So, you know.
In the new Smurfs movie that's about to be released.
Oh, really? Now that I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, now we talked in the first segment about scripting or lack thereof in the film. I'm guessing that when these two, Winters and Williams, were together, you couldn't possibly tell them what to say or what to do.
Well, we've actually had conversations with a couple of the directors from Mork and Mindy, and they both said, well, the writers hated both of them because once they got together, you know, they would turn a 3-minute scene into a 45-minute scene, and then they couldn't figure out how to cut the thing. Mm-hmm. So, but he said it was the funniest stuff you'd ever seen. It was much funnier than the shows they were writing. Unlike us, we got the two of them together for an hour, and most of the material was so blue we couldn't put it in the film.
Not that there wasn't some blue material in the film.
Right.
Yes, but it's,
gosh,
it's very, very human. And Jonathan prides himself on having done clean humor all his life.
Yes, we had to cut out a lot of a lot of words that he didn't like in the film.
Yeah, he's only human, you know.
And there was just one other thought about Jonathan has said to us several times in the past that he said, I don't think my career was as big as it could have been because people, producers, writers, they didn't trust me because I don't follow scripts very well. So, but he's a master improv. I mean, you can't get any better than Jonathan. That's just who he was. So
yes, they were afraid that they couldn't control him. Actors in general are the one uncontrollable element on a set, and Jonathan was beyond control. and so there was this fear of craziness. And Jonathan's really, really proud of being crazy, and he thinks the world would be a lot better if other people were proud of being crazy, too.
Now, tell me about some of the other cameos and the comedians. And I think you sort of referenced this in the first segment. You said that people were kind of appearing. I guess they were hearing about what you were working on.
The project was blessed in a way because Jim Carrey came into the gallery as Jonathan was setting up. And Jonathan was one of his heroes. And when he heard Jonathan was there and was looking at Jonathan's paintings, we brought the two of them together, and that was lucky. Lucky the way Robert Klein walked into the studio one day, saw Jonathan's paintings, and he was in the film. And when Robin agreed to be in the film, thanks to a friend who brought us there, we knew that we suddenly had something very special. And it was at that point that the phone started ringing, and managers and agents were calling us to tell us that their actors wanted to be in the movie with Jonathan. They wanted an opportunity to be in the film with their hero because many of them said they were comedians because of Jonathan Winters. He was like the formative influence. And consequently, they were very nervous at first when they got together with the master. But that disappeared. And Richard and I were lucky. We were in the presence of a lot of genius. And we've got 240 hours that we had to cut down to only 80 minutes. So we have this treasure chest of scenes that we're going to put on our DVDs. storylines that never made their way into the film. And, you know, we feel a great responsibility because this could very well be Jonathan's last movie.
And you know, and part of our mission really is to introduce Jonathan to a whole new generation of people that just really aren't that familiar with him and his influence on comedy. So
one of the things I was impressed by was you had impressed by this is it's maybe a strange way to say it, but you had Howie Mandel with Jonathan Winters in Target. The first thing that struck me is from what I know of Howie, I was surprised that he was touching as many things in Target as he is, because I understand he's got a real germ phobia and, you know, he had his hands on all kinds of things.
Yeah, but then the interesting thing is that you can, you know, when we were miking Howie, he had no problem with, you know, having our hands up his shirt and everything. But it's the palms. He doesn't want to touch anything with the palms of his hand. It's very
interesting.
He's a very healthy influence. You know, for a while we were walking around doing this.
And Howie did say to Jonathan when they met, he said, "I am in this business because of you." Solely. I mean, solely because of you. And the reason why we were at Target is we asked Howie, we said, "Howie, if Jonathan has lost his sense of humor, what would you do to help him get it back?" And he'd go, "I'd take him to Target."
You can buy anything at Target.
It's a great line. I know.
That's where we ended up.
Yeah.
And I love the lady that they encounter there who said, you know, Howie said, where could he find a sense of humor? And she said, "Why, in the toy aisle, of course." You know, it's just. So I'm giving away that I didn't make that up. That was
that you actually saw the film, huh?
I did see the film.
You could say you saw the film.
I did. Well, I think it shows that I saw the film. I took some of my best lines from there. Before we have to wrap up, how is Jonathan today? I mean, one of the things it's kind of sad in the film is that his wife passed before the film was released. How is Jonathan today?
He's not in good health. He's not in good health. And he was shaken by the death of his wife. They were married over 60 years. And, you know, his kids are having problems around him. And in a way, one of the reality structures that he relies on and has sort of fallen apart. But I think he's having, last time we saw him, he really didn't look well. So we're hoping that
he's mentally all there, believe me. He's very sharp still. He's working on a kid's book right now for probably older kids. It's fairly dark. And he's about to have he's got a new CD that that's going to be released in the next couple of months too. Comedy CD.
And not only that, you know, Certifiably Jonathan is opening all over the country. I mean, a lot of people are meeting Jonathan for the first time. And despite some mixed reviews, audiences love this film. We're always packed and they have to schedule extra screenings at the festivals. It really is an audience film. And so we're excited about opening it at the Music Hall on April Fool's Day, hoping every fool in town will come and see the movie. You know, it's playing in different parts of the country. And I really advise or hope people go to our Facebook page, Certifiably Jonathan, and click like, okay? And in 11 weeks, we've surpassed 82,000 fans.
Wow.
So there are a lot of people out there who really love Jonathan Winters, and it's great for all of us to see that.
Well, folks, Jim Pasternak and Richard Marshall's new film, Certifiably Jonathan, starring Jonathan Winters with a healthy dose of Robin Williams, opens at movie theaters nationwide, I believe, on April 1st. And learn more about the film at certifiablyjonathan.com, or as they mentioned, on Facebook. They're also on Twitter, and you can watch a chunk of the movie on YouTube. Get a taste of it. Jim Pasternak, Richard Marshall, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And the film also has Sarah Silverman, Howie Mandel, Jimmy Kimmel, and a whole host of other stars.
Plenty of people in this movie. You really should check this out. And for more original interviews with your favorite filmmakers, you can surf over to our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. And if you enjoyed today's show, subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can, as many in Hollywood do, in many locations. Show your support for Mr. Media by clicking on our sponsor ads or making a donation via PayPal to help defray the cost of producing the show. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media Radio, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com. And you can follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, folks. We always appreciate you giving up a piece of your day, spending it with us. Thanks for watching, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is comedian Mark Maron, and I love Mr. Media Radio, even though he didn't let me go on as long as some other guests.